Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop Fun.
It's Big Love, Pop Art, and Fun Times from the Wilson World Studios in California, USA. It's Big Pop Fun. Here's Tom Wilson.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Big Pop Fun Podcast with Tom Wilson. I am Tom Wilson, your lovely and talented and enchanting host, if you've got very, very low standards. Thanks, Jeff Harlan, for doing the announcements. I always try to thank Jeff because he is slumming it here. Jeff is one of the really leading commercial and theatrical actors and announcers, voiceover people in Hollywood. I have to get him on the show, actually, as a guest, because if only to get the story of when he was a delivery boy delivering a package to Alfred Hitchcock's house in Beverly Hills on Alfred Hitchcock's birthday. That is a teaser, but it's a very good story, so I'm going to have him on to tell it, if he would. Hey, welcome to the podcast. Another magical sleigh ride of enchantment and wonder as we put away the worries of the day, warm up our earbuds, and get ready to just be enchanted and entertained, as I said, if we have very, very low standards. So come along with me, and we'll have some fun together, I hope. It's brought to you by the cheese, a very good food that I like to eat. I wasn't going to mention this. I actually have one less sponsor than the last time we spoke. I only have a couple of sponsors, but it's brought to you by McPherson Guitars, a fabulous guitar company that makes just supreme instruments. I don't even deserve to actually play one of their guitars, and yet I do, out of their kindness and generosity. So thanks so much to McPherson Guitars. I have one less. The guitar string company that I used to thank at the end of the show, well, in the economic downturn, many companies have decided to streamline and to give out way less free stuff. And the guitar string company was one of them. So, yeah, they didn't notify me or anything. They just they just took me off the website. And I tried to call the guy to get guitar strings, and I couldn't find him. And then some dude emailed me, you know, with that kind of 2012 PR thing. Yeah, we're kind of streamlining the system, but hey, if I can help you with anything else, that'd be swell. Hey, Ted, what else would I need you to help me with other than, you know, am I getting free guitar strings from you guys? So I'm not brought to you by them, but you can imagine the heartbreak, and I hope that you just see me in your little mind's eye walking out in the freezing cold of an 82-degree Los Angeles day, scarf wrapped around my neck, braving the cold and winds to buy my own guitar strings. Anyway, it's brought to you by McPherson Guitars, and I thank them. And I thanks for stopping by. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you're enjoying the podcast. I'm amazed, as I say, at the emails and the mails I'm getting, the postcards and stuff. So thanks for that. I got an email from Judd Apatow, my old friend, recently. As you all know, Judd is now a movie giant now. He's really something. I met Judd when he was about, 17 years old at the Improv doing stand-up. Judd went off to work with Gary Shandling on his shows and to do TV shows, and we did Freaks and Geeks together, and Judd went off to, as I told Judd, look, I've never worked with anyone who the New York Times eventually called the mayor of comedy. Okay, Judd is called the mayor of comedy by the New York Times. So he's done very, very well for himself. He emailed me, would I like to do a Vanity Fair shoot with the cast of Freaks and Geeks? Now, there are many requests that I get for many things, but I think I would be the last person on earth. Okay, I could think of three other guys, but I'm in that group of the last guys that you would imagine going to a Vanity Fair shoot. I'm not a, you know, Vanity Fair like, but I have nothing against the magazine. I don't read the magazine. It seems thick and very fancy with car ads of cars that I'm not even, you know, that I don't mean not even close to buying, that I don't even really look at them with any kind of like, wow, look at that. I just, it's out of my league, you know, so I don't even go there. The Vanity Fair. So Judd Apatow, who has purchased many of my paintings. My paintings figure prominently in Judd's office, believe it or not. And I didn't even try to sell them to him. Judd emailed me many years ago saying, I see your paintings online and boy, I'd like to have some. So bring over a bunch and I'll buy some and put them up in my office. Boy, that was nice of him. And I went over there and he bought a bunch of paintings and put them up in his office. And it's great. It's great. And yeah, early on, back when you're putting together an art resume and you're putting, you know, the painters always put on from the collection of, you know, or many collectors collect my paintings. Well, when nobody was collecting my paintings on my art resume, I would put, you know, in the collection of Judd Apatow. And well, way back when I put it on, I don't think anyone even knew really who he was, but now they do. And the paintings are, in fact, a painter friend of mine actually put on his that from the collection of in his, I saw Stacy Keach, the actor Stacy Keach. So I actually a few years later, I was actually working with Stacy Keach on something. And I said, oh, I know you're an art collector. You collect pieces of oil paintings, huh? You have a piece for my friend. And he looked at me, he cocked his head like a terrier on a sitcom, like just, And I went, yes, a painting. So you're a painting collector. Cause I see you're on the, you know, you have a, he says, I've never heard of him. I don't know what you're talking about. So look, artists make it up. So, but I didn't make it up when it was Judd. Vanity Fair shoot. Sorry, it's Mr. Tangent. Well, it's one of those, this is one of those solo episodes that some people hate and they're already gone. So let's just talk, all you people that like the solo ones. I'll do my little solo, jingle, Big Pop Fun. Hey, it's the best, but Tom's been really busy, so he couldn't do it with this one with a guest. Big Pop Fun. Okay. So I've been involved in many things in the industry, but the last thing I foresaw was being involved in a Vanity Fair shoot. Now, listen, I might not be in it, okay? I don't usually say much about what I do in the future because you can be cut out of that movie. You can easily not show up in Vanity Fair. I'm telling you about the story of the Vanity Fair shoot, but believe me, I know it. I may never appear. Judd is the guest editor of the, I believe it's the January 2013 issue, the comedy issue, but yes, I don't say much about what I do to people until I had a podcast. I was the guy that everyone said, no, what? You didn't tell me you were in this thing. Well, I don't, you know, I didn't know if I was going to be in it ultimately. You know, you didn't tell me that. Look, people, I was in the pilot for the show Caroline in the City. Wait a minute. I saw that show. Tom was never in Caroline in the City. That's my point. I was actually the first voice of the guy in Jumanji, which was a cartoon series after the movie. Wait a minute. That wasn't Tom's voice. I think yes, exactly. It's very easy to not show up in things, so I don't go around telling people what I'm in. But we did a Vanity Fair shoot out at Van Nuys High School at the gym, and they got everybody there. It's Vanity Fair. So I show up in the morning for the shoot in the high school gym. We're going to shoot it on the bleachers and everything, and everyone's there. And that was terrific. It was terrific because they're great people. And as you guys know, or anyone who's seen Freaks and Geeks, that thing has ended up to be huge. I mean, it's a show that just became a hit as a DVD. So no one ever watched it when it was on TV. It was 18 episodes. No one watched it. It got a fan following as a DVD set. If you haven't seen it, check out the Freaks and Geeks DVD because it's really great. But everyone's become movie stars. James Franco was there. Great guy, you know, but James Franco is a movie star. Well, James Franco, Seth Rogen, Jason Segel was there. Linda Cardellini was there. Jason Schwartzman was there. John Francis Daly, Martin Starr, Sam Levine, Joe Flaherty, Dave Gruber Allen. Lots of people from the show were there. And it was great. It was old home week, and we're hugging, and it was very, very nice. But then it was time to do the shoot. I was the only one that ended up having a problem with the shoot people. It's a Vanity Fair shoot. There were more makeup, hair, wardrobe, planning, photography people than there are in a huge movie. I think there were three makeup people for every person. It was wild. So you go through makeup and you go through hair and it's fancy schmancy and it's all New York people because it's Vanity Fair and it's Mark Seliger, the fancy schmancy photographer and everything. I'm the first guy that has a problem because they give me – I go to wardrobe and everyone's brought things that they're comfortable in because that's them. It's going to be us now, you know, not in character or whatever, but the wardrobe gives me tracksuits. Because I'm the coach. I play Coach Fredericks on Freaks and Geeks. I played Coach Fredericks years ago. Wardrobe gives me a tracksuit. I mean, they want me in a green tracksuit and a whistle. Hey, it's everybody and they're themselves. And over there's the coach. So I'm like, I brought a couple shirts that you told me to that I think are nice looking and they're nice. And I would like to wear these. It gets to be a big thing. I have to go over and talk to Judd. Hey, Judd, do you want me to tracksuit? No, I want you in what you are. Something authentic. I want you to do that. So I'm wearing a shirt and I'm the only guy that's made a problem. I'm like the lowest guy on the totem pole, and I'm the temperamental actor guy who doesn't wear the tracksuit with a whistle or something. Anyway, we shot a lot of shots. We shot things on it took many, many, many hours as we shot with various things. There's the crux of the cast, you know, the James Franco and Seth Rogen and Jason Segel and Linda Cardellini and those kind of the people that are all big stars now. That's completely understandable. And then it was an extended cast with the teachers and parents, Joe Flaherty and Becky and Dave Gruber Allen and myself and It was a lot of fun, but it was hot in a high school gym. So I hope I make it in the magazine. At the end of the shoot, well, toward the end of the shoot, the wardrobe people that I had a hard time with, they come up with a notebook and they're taking down all of the clothes that the people, the actors brought with them so that they can put it in the magazine. This one is wearing that and he's wearing whatever, Giorgio Armani, thingamajig. So the girl comes up to me with a notebook and she says, yes, we need to take down all the companies that you're wearing so that we can put them in the magazine. So who are your jeans by? I say, who are my jeans by? She says, yes, who does your jeans? And I say, Kirkland Signature. And she stares at me blankly. She doesn't know what it is. She says, Kirkland Signature? What is that? So much. Another girl comes up and there are two of them. Who are your jeans by? I say, Kirkland Signature. The one who comes up says, you bought your jeans at Costco? I say, yeah, you buy them like four pairs at a time. They wear out. You buy four new pairs, put them in the drawer, boom, wear them out. They're just, they're just jeans. They say, we can't put that in the magazine. I go, well, I don't care. Whatever. The girl says, do you mind if we say they're Tommy Hilfiger? Okay, fine. I don't say whatever you want. I don't care. They go, who are your shoes by? Say, my shoes? My shoes are hardly in the shop. My shoes, I took these off a shoot at the Walt Disney Studio. So you could, I don't know. They're like Walt Disney Studio shoes. They were comfortable. They're black. I don't know. She says, we're going to say Cole Haan. So that's it. My jeans, if I appear in Vanity Fair, just make a note. My jeans are by Tommy Hilfiger, Kirkland Signature. My shoes are by Cole Haan. I stole them off a Disney shoot.
This is my podcast, my only podcast. It makes me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, folks, how much I love you. But to some of you who send me a lot of emails, let's just call it like. I don't want to set you off.
It's Big Pop Fun.
I'm not a director, and I don't want to be a director. You know, it's the old Hollywood joke. Everybody says, but what I really want to do is direct. And I was amazed when I first came out here decades ago and I went to Samuel French, which is a bookstore that has plays and books for actors and all things of interest in the entertainment industry, how to make your own movie, how to do all this. And I would go to that store because there's a Samuel French in New York City when I lived there. And I just loved acting books and that kind of thing. But when I got to the one in Hollywood, I went in and figured prominently were coffee mugs and T-shirts and all kinds of things with artwork on it. And they all said in lettering, what I really want to do is direct. So I thought, really? You get here and the first thing you want to – I want to celebrate acting and do something interesting. But really the overarching theme of the city is what I really want to do is direct, which I don't think that's really true. I think it's what I really want is for people to think I'm even more important than I actually am. It's like directing is secondary to being a big shot, which is the most important thing. Anyway, I'm not a director. I don't want to be a director. But, you know, many years ago, I was trying to be a director just because, hey, another job maybe. I don't know. Maybe you become a director. A lot of people that I know have become great directors. Peter Bonners, he played in the old Bob Newhart show. He played Jerry the Dentist. Peter went on from there and became really one of the top television directors for the past, you know, 20 years. So, hey, who knows? But a couple of gigs came up and I was trying to direct. And I directed – well, it was a company that a friend was producing commercials for, so I was trying to direct diet pill commercials. Yes. I was the first assistant director on a commercial with pro wrestler – what was his name? Kane. He wore a leather – the guy was, I don't know, 6'7" tall. He was just a giant, over 300 pounds, 6'7", wore a leather mask. At all times, so that no one would photograph him and it would be out and his pro wrestling career would be ruined. So so that was my first stint at trying to help a director, and that was interesting. But I got a major opportunity to direct a couple of commercials just as I was cast in the TV show Nash Bridges. Yeah, Nash Bridges, shooting in San Francisco with Don Johnson, Cheech Marin, and a convertible car or something. It was going to be a week maximum. I'd be right back to go to my directing job and to be a big-time director and start my path of directing. Now, I flew up to San Francisco for this week for an easy show. Boom, 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 we'll be done. The Nash Bridges set was set right on the water in San Francisco with a great view of the Oakland Bay Bridge. It was the set itself was on a floating barge that they didn't have room on this parking lot that was next to the water. So they built this floating barge that was the police station. And I go to the set ready to knock this thing out of the park and head back to L.A. to become a director. I was there the first morning, a glorious morning on the San Francisco Bay, ready to work. But where was Don Johnson? Don Johnson wasn't there. And he wasn't there for hours. Everyone was sitting around staring at each other. I was in makeup. I had my cop outfit on. I was ready to go. But no Don Johnson. But no one was saying that. Everyone was just kind of waiting around because no one wanted to make trouble. So you just kind of waited and you waited. And you, I mean, for hours. Let me say in the outset that Cheech Marin is a great guy. Cheech is a great and patient guy, and Cheech would be there, and Cheech was just hanging out, just waiting. Well, Don didn't show up to work, like for the whole day. Don Johnson didn't show up to work for a lot of days. I mean, so, you know, some days on this thing, we waited a long, long time for him to see if maybe he was going to show up. And some other days, the producers would eventually come up to me and say, hey, Tom, we're going to fly you back to L.A. for a while, you know, to see if Don's going to want to shoot in a few days. In a few days, they didn't know. He could either show up or not show up. And I was telling him, but I have a gig directing. I came up here for a week. I can't go back and forth whenever Don Johnson wants to work. Yeah, well, we're going to have to see when Don's going to come. Look, I said, I can't wait for Don. I mean, I'm going to be a director. And yeah, Tom. Yeah, well, one day I flew back up to San Francisco. I was doing this. I was going up to San Francisco, waiting 3 days to see if Don would show up. And he would either show up, we'd do a couple scenes, and then he'd disappear again, and I'd be flown back to L.A., or I'd just be down here in L.A. for days as I'm trying to change the date of my directing gig and trying to hang on to it. Well, I flew up to San Francisco one of these days. When I got to the set, a man was walking a lion outside in the parking lot. Yet you heard me correctly. A man was walking a lion on a leash, like a big lion. He was an animal trainer. And he brought a bear from Canada to be in the episode I was trying to finish. Now, he had lions, he had cheetahs, he had all kinds of animals, and he was training them, and he would take them in the truck together so he could be training the lion, walking the lion. The bear was there. So the bear, the lion wasn't in Nash Bridges. The bear was cast in Nash Bridges. I played some Canadian Mountie guy that now was supposed to wrestle a bear. So the bear was costing them, I don't know what, $2,500 a day, $3,000, I don't know what, but the bear was costing a lot every day. And the bear, you know, he had to shoot out his show. They couldn't send the bear back to Canada and back and forth. The bear had to shoot out his part of the show. The bear did not know if Don Johnson would be there or not. The bear was there and ready to work. This bear was huge. The bear's head, I mean, I'm holding my hands out, had to be, I don't know what that is, but let's say 2.5 feet across. It was huge. When the bear stood on its hind legs, it was 9 feet tall. Yeah, 9 foot tall bear. So Don wasn't there for Bear Day. So we have to shoot with the bear without Don. So we're out there. The bear is not, of course, out of the cage. They set up this electrical wire that gives a slight shock. And wherever the bear is going to walk, it's like a little lead wire that on one side is some wire, on the other side is some wire. So the bear kind of knows where it's headed. And if it hits this wire, it's this gentle shock that just keeps it sort of on the straight and narrow. Yeah, it was a joke. The wire was a joke. We're starting to shoot with the bear, but nobody told me. Nobody told me. We're on the set without Don. And they say, the director's saying, well, now, okay. Now, when Tom's in the store and the bear comes up to him, what? Excuse me? What? Nobody told me about the live bear. Nobody had asked me if it was okay for me to act with a bear, but not with Don Johnson. Nobody had mentioned it. No, nobody had mentioned it at all. They just said, now, well, Tom's there with the bear. It's going to be, and I said, wait a minute, guys. Let me think about that. I mean, you want me to act with the bear? Now, let's cut back about 40 years. I was a little kid, and my dad was a member of the Union League of Philadelphia, a very nice club for you know, men and women and people, professionals in downtown Philadelphia, and they had father and son nights. And we went to this father and son night when I was a little kid, and they would have a nice dinner, and they would have a speaker, and they would give out, you know, chocolate sundaes, and then they would have a show. One of the shows was this bear that wrestled people. It had kind of a muzzle on, and some Russian guy, and you know, we're talking about, it was, you know, I don't know what it was, 1967. So the animal rules were probably far less stringent than they are now. But some Russian guy brought a bear to wrestle people. And the dad, where is the father to wrestle bear? So a dad volunteers to wrestle this bear, which it's presented as, oh, perfectly safe. The bear was not any 9 foot tall bear. The bear was, say, 6 feet tall probably when it stood up. And you kind of went up and you danced with the bear a little bit. So the first dad goes up. He's smiling at his son. He takes off his nice jacket and everything. He comes up, starts wrestling. The bear stands up and the bear bit him. The bear just went, nobody really knew what happened, but the bear stands up and just goes at the guy. And the bear bit as the guy extended his hand toward the bear bit the guy's hand. So everyone gasps and the man turns white as a sheet and collapses. He collapsed in front of everyone. And they brought him off and they called an ambulance and everything. And they brought him off. And I suppose he had just had a heart attack or gone into shock and something. But in my young mind, the bear bit his hand and he died. It was very memorable to me. It really seared a picture in my mind that I'm remembering now, that bear. So I'm not going anywhere near a live bear. But that's not what I said on the set. What I said was, why don't I take a look at the scene, put a stunt double in there, and then I'll see the bear's action and show me what you have in mind, and we'll see if it's something that I want to do. There was no way I was going to do it. But, you're acting like a good sport. Hey, let's see it. We'll see it, and we'll see if it's something that I want to do. So the trainer takes the stuntman. He tells him about the bear. He tells him what to do. Don't make any sudden movements toward the bear. Just gently be around the bear. He gives the stuntman a marshmallow. He says, put this marshmallow in your right hand. Now, when the bear enters the set, if the bear does anything that frightens you, anything out of the ordinary, just drop the marshmallow. Don't throw it at the bear. Just drop the marshmallow and walk away slowly. Okay, the plan is set. The stuntman has a marshmallow. It's on the set. I'm watching. The entire set is watching. The trainer says, everybody be quiet. We need silence. He didn't need to say anything like that. The bear came on the set. As soon as the bear came out of this cage and walked onto the set, there was the silence like a group of gazelles with sprained ankles on the Serengeti, like slow gazelles staring at a lion. We are prey if the bear decides to eat us. So this gigantic bear comes out, and we're just inwardly chuckling at these wires, these powerless wires. A shock? If the bear wants to eat anyone, we're done. So the bear comes in. The bear walks along on its track. The stuntman holding the marshmallow is standing on the set. The bear walks right up to him, moves towards him with its giant head. The bear grunts. The bear just goes and moves toward the guy. The guy drops the marshmallow, walks away, walks off the set, walks right up to me, leans in close and says, "Don't go near the bear." So I didn't. I didn't go near the bear. No, they shot the trainer. Finally, the scene was the trainer was wrestling the bear. And I wrestled a guy in a bear suit. The trainer wrestled the bear. The trainer was scared to death of this bear. It's ridiculous. But so I wrestled a guy in a bear suit. But the fact is they couldn't find a guy big enough to look like a bear. So I was actually bigger than the guy in the bear suit that I wrestled. But anyway, the bear was scary. The bear went back to Canada. They sent it back to Canada. Don never showed up for the scene. So I was trying to salvage my directing gig at this time. And the directing gig was going away. But Don came back to shoot the other part of the bear scene. So Don's there. They describe the action of the scene. Here, Tom's character, Don, he gets into a wrestling thing with the bear. And Don Johnson says, "Well, where's the bear?" I said, "What do you mean, Don? The, I mean, the,
The bear went back to Canada. Who said to send the bear back to Canada? Don, the bear cost $2,500. Don wanted to see the bear for the scene. They sent the bear back to Canada, I don't know, 2 weeks before or something? So, and the director of the episode quits, all right? The assistant director has to direct the rest of the episode, and I shot the rest of my stuff, and my directing gig was shot. I finished. I finished that episode, finally. They have a van that's taking me to the airport to take me back to Los Angeles and be done with Natch Bridges. Though I may add, Cheech Marin, great guy. I get in the van. Okay, ready to go. My bags are packed. Leaving on a jet plane. The van is not moving. Not moving at all. Can we go? The van driver, I can't drive right now. What do you mean? Let's say 150 yards away, maybe, approximately, is Don Johnson's big, it's not a trailer, it's like a motorhome, his dressing room and everything. Outside the dressing room, one of Don's assistants is throwing a ball for Don's dog. They're not throwing the ball anywhere near us. They're not throwing the ball in our direction. It's just a giant macadam, you know, parking lot. They're throwing it away from all the cars, away from everything. And the dog's going to get the ball and coming back. I say, I'm going to be late for my plane. I really got to go. The van driver says, I can't drive right now. A van driver once drove close to Don's dog and he got fired. I can't go anywhere near the dog. If the dog, you know, just ends up running towards us and it's near the van, I'll get fired. So the van driver wouldn't drive to the airport because of Don's dog. So I just eventually I had lost my directing gig. I'm not going to be a director. And I said, if you don't drive this van to the airport right now, I'm hopping out and I'm going to go kill Don Johnson's dog in front of you. And I'm going to say that you told me to do it. So we left and I lost the directing gig. But the fact is, I don't want to be a director because they directors pretty much wear down vests and they squint a lot and they have to make a lot of decisions and there's a lot of pressure on them. And if there are 15 actors in a TV show or a movie, there is one director. So the numbers are against you. So what I really want to do is not direct or act with bears. You're Don Johnson.
Hello. This is Ben Bernanke, chairman of the Federal Reserve. But I'm not helping to control the money supply in order to stimulate the American economy. I'm watching my old VHS tape of Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man. Boy, that Don Johnson can really act. Or listening to the Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson podcast. Enjoy. Oh, back to saving the economy.
Celebrity voice impersonated.
Hey, little people, welcome to me. I'm special, I'm different, I'm who you want to be. Forget all those stupid things you used to believe. It's more important to be photogenic. At big movie premieres, I expensively dress. If you got a red carpet and a whole lot of press, so I'll preach to the camera, though my life is a mess. But don't look closely, no, that doesn't matter. Hollywood loves you, Hollywood cares. Put your nose near my head, you can smell the fresh air. Just scratch off the surface, there's so much more surface there. Hollywood loves you, just don't look away. No, 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 don't look away. I save the environment from my luxury car while playing my rainforest endangered guitar. I love starving people, at least from afar. Unless it's cute, then I might just adopt one. I'm serving humanity through hardship and strife. I'll never forsake you, just ask my third wife. I'd even live with my kids if it didn't mess up my life, but that's just me. I'm clearly amazing. See, Hollywood loves you, Hollywood cares. Put your nose near my head, you can smell the fresh air. Oh, scratch off the surface, there's so much more surface there. Hollywood loves you. No, 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 don't look away. As long as you don't look away. I care for the earth and I never forget to recycle all the plastic in my private jet. Oh, I like self-reflection, and I'll tell you why. I like looking into mirrors, and I like saying I, Hollywood loves you, Hollywood cares. Put your nose near my head, you can smell the fresh air. Oh, scratch off the surface, there's so much more surface there. Hollywood loves you, as long as you don't look away. No, 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 don't look away.
Well, thanks so much for downloading the podcast. I appreciate it more than I can say. It's really been amazing. Thanks to Emily Wilson for producing. Thanks to Chris and Katie, everybody over at Nerdist Industries. Thanks to the people at McPherson Guitars for all their help with my live show. But most of all, thanks to you. I appreciate it very much. I'm having fun with this. I hope you are. Hey, consider telling a friend or subscribe to the podcast, and we'll talk to you next time. Thanks.
Nerdist.com